This episode is brought to you by Bricker Builds. If you're a fan of Batman 89, which if you're listening, we assume you are, or if you're not yet, you're going to be by the end of this interview, then you should totally check out their 1989 Batarang model. We will link it in the description down below. It is a fantastic build. We have an entire episode dedicated to it and the other one, which you can see over Grant's shoulder there, which is the Nolan model. And they are absolutely fantastic builds. We cannot recommend them enough. They're cost effective. And if you use our promo code, you get 5% off. And our promo code is MuchTalkLego at BrickerBuilds.com. Again, use our promo code for 5% off these fantastic builds that look and feel exactly like they do in the movie and fit perfectly in the palm of your hand, as Grant is showing you here. And use promo code MuchTalkLego at BrickerBuilds.com to get 5% off your order and let them know that we sent you. Please do that. We love it when you do that. Anyway, back to the interview with the wonderful Mr. Carl Newman. So, Grant, I know you have the list of questions that we've kind of put together. Do you want to start that off?
Yeah, so I guess my first question is, what did you do in your career before you were in the Batman movie?
Yeah, so I was a professional dancer. I'd gone and I trained at a very reputable college performing arts called Lane Theatre Arts in Epsom in Surrey. I'd done 3 years there in all facets of dance, the whole spectrum, with acting and singing as well. And one thing the college also encouraged you to do was to get out and get some work, and then you could add to your equity card, which is your union card in the UK here. And once I started doing that, I was picking up some work. I graduated, getting more work, just doing a variety of great things. So I could do television, film, video, pop videos, commercials, theatre, trade shows, the whole spectrum, really, which was fantastic. But also prior to Batman and college, I was this guy that absolutely loved music. So to begin with, I was actually playing the drums. I've been passionate with the drums from the age of 11, probably even before, but I started to take lessons from the age of 11, playing with various bands and orchestras and groups. And then the dance kind of came in from there, that a dance school spotted me doing some stuff and I was encouraged to do more. But I'd also been very sporty. My late father had encouraged me with keeping fit and doing weight training and weightlifting. But I did everything at school. I did all the various sports. So I was a very passionate guy, you know, who also got involved with some athletic clubs as well. So I was a very busy guy, you know, doing all these different things. And funny enough, Batman was something that I loved as a kid. You know, the 60s TV series was there. I was a big fan of that. You know, I wanted one of those red phones. you know, I loved the Batcave and the car. I thought the actors were fantastic, the whole feel. And look what happened, you know, my sort of dream came true.
It really did, yeah. So how excited were you? Kind of how did you end up being the double for Batman? Because how did that come together?
It was very surreal, actually, Grom, because I was sharing digs with a guy, and I'd had this phone call from my agents, an agent called Dancers, and they were the very first agents in London to get set up. And they called me, and I sort of heard the brief, if you like, but I hadn't got quite the right angle. But I went along to Pinewood Studios and I met first assistant director Derek Cracknell. So I met him. We spoke about the movie and how exciting it was to have a film like this being made in England and at the world famous Pinewood Studios. I went away from that meeting and then didn't hear anything for some time. And then I ended up staying at another digs with a group of dance students. And then I got that wonderful phone call where they said, "Carl, we need you to come in, try the suit on, show us what you can do." So I was really hyped and pumped from that phone call. I shot into Pinewood Studios. It was wonderful because I met the wardrobe team. There was Vim Burnham, who sculpted the cowl. There was William Todd Jones and Dave Murch, who were both bat suit wranglers. I met them and we really clicked. And I think they were very, very happy how I looked in the suit. And they were especially happy how the cowl fitted me because I got the right sort of jawline and everything, the chin. And then it was quite bizarre because I put the full Batman regalia on and there wasn't really a huge amount I could do. They said, well, look, go down the corridors, get a feel for it. So I was running up and down these corridors. As you can imagine, I was in some kind of dream, you know, this most amazing feeling. There I am in the most iconic, fantastic Batman suit, everything on. I ran up and down these corridors. It was like an out-of-body experience or something. And then I went back to wardrobe and just waited. And then one of the other assistant directors came, said, right, Carl, we're ready for you. Took me in one of my little golf buggies to the Gotham back lot, which was absolutely amazing. I mean, as you probably know, it was about a mile and a half long, this recreation of Gotham City.
Wow.
In this golf buggy, they sort of dropped me off there. That's when I met Tim, which was just amazing, you know, to meet a guy like him who I'd admired his work previously with Beetlejuice, etc., and Pee Wee. But then he was so lovely and he just wanted me to show what I could do in the suit. So I was just throwing myself around, running, jumping, doing leaps, whatever I could do just to show my versatility, my athleticism, if you like. So, yeah, I was sort of so excited, but also I was trying to contain things because we know what it's like when you go on castings and you know, meetings, whatever, that you don't want to get ahead of yourself. And I was just waiting. I just felt quietly, well, more than quietly, but very confident inside because I just thought, you know, I've got all the attributes here. I've got the physical sort of attributes, the sporting background, the dance background. I knew I looked right and how I held myself. And I just waited on the sidelines and they tapped me on the shoulder and said, we'd like you to stay. And it was kind of like everything was jumping inside, the whole excitement, but not, again, not trying to get, probably a bit of English reserve there, you know, just trying to contain that utter sheer electricity and excitement that, hey, you know, I'm here, I'm going to be doing this. But I think also with the way that things were handled, they were just gauging things. They didn't sort of say outright, look, Carl, we want you here for 12 weeks, 16 weeks, whatever. They just kind of gave me the gig. My agent then got the contract to a degree and they were sort of employing me so many weeks at a time. But it was absolutely incredible. And I think coincidentally as well for me was that I'd been filming there prior to Batman. I'd been working on another filming job because dancers get used an awful lot, as we know, through TV and film. And I'd heard from one of the other dancers, oh, about the Batman. And they'd said they'd seen... you know, Jerry Hall, which I found really, really exciting. I thought, oh, and then isn't that so uncanny and so coincidental that I'm there filming prior to Batman and then I'm there actually on that fantastic film set. It was just magnificent. So yeah, ultra excited, but tried to manage it in a cool and calm and collected way.
That is... your best too.
Yes. I mean, it was, I think, you know, they were just such a great team. The wardrobe team were lovely and we became very good friends during and after filming. And I think that's a special thing as well, because sometimes with filming, you can work on something and yeah, you can all get on, but it can be over and then that's it. But I actually did stay in touch and I went on social outings and gatherings with the wardrobe people. I think that was so special. And even now, you know, I keep in touch with Vin through the social media, and I was disappointed I didn't get to see her recently at a mutual friend's sort of service, if you like. They sadly passed away, and we were meant to meet up, but we still keep in touch, and I think that's really special.
That's something we don't hear a lot. So it's like we'll talk to people, and most of the time they talk about people, how they were and how they, like, at the time we got along. I haven't seen them in 30 years, and so it's incredible.
It's lovely, isn't it? I think that shows a great spirit, doesn't it, and a great respect for one another and appreciation that you know, I always had that with all of them. And you know, I think they so wished for me in many ways for me to have done returns, but because I was getting some inside information from Day, especially who worked on the returns. But you know, these things are mapped out in some ways, and you can't change that destiny. You know, I think, you know, that there were several things that were going on that looked as though I'd be a dead cert for that sequel, but for some reason the stars were not quite aligned, or the gods were not you know, holding hands for me on that sequel. So it took me in another direction, and you know, I'm always grateful for what I've experienced and other things. So you know, if someone had said to me, well, look, you can do the first one or the sequel, I would have always gone for the first, because it's so iconic, isn't it?
Right. And you got to be a big part of a lot of those iconic scenes, right? So you were the first appearance, and then...
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that was just like unbelievable, really. You know, that very first shot where he lands on the rooftop, you know, with the muggers. And I can just picture it now with the guys sort of winching me up with the Kirby wires and the harness on, and just winching me up, and then, you know, getting that perfect timing to sort of fly me in at the right speed and angle. I mean, as been discovered on previous podcasts and things, is the real sad thing was that I had an even earlier sequence, which is where I was crouched with the gargoyles on the roof, on the top of the cathedral. And that was just so sad that scene got deleted, because I still believe, and many fans and appreciators just feel that would have been absolutely amazing to have witnessed that, rather than using the animation that I think was poor. You know, I didn't think it had the same flow and the same context of the movie, whereas you've got that beautifully lit gothic scene with me, and you're just wondering, and then I'm doing these minimal movements. And it took a lot of dedication and hard work to keep a nice pose there. But I still have to be very grateful, don't I, that I got that lovely scene of that beautiful silhouette being made where I land very softly, and then the cape comes down slowly, and then you hear that crunching sound, and the muggers look up, and then that's when I take off. You know, again, spreading the cape, menacing, and sort of jumping down to get closer to them. And then Michael does that sort of flap down at the very end of that, and carries on where he delivers that kick, that famous kick, or Sean certainly did anyway. Sean McKay did that kick, but it was wonderful.
It's just amazing to think about. You're talking about working with Michael, and we're just sitting here like, that's Michael Keaton, and it's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah.
I've been watching that guy in movies since I was, you know, old enough to watch movies, and it's just Crazy.
He's brilliant. I mean, he is a brilliant actor. And again, I'd seen Michael's work. I mean, he's so versatile, isn't he? And Pacific Heights with Matthew Modine, of course, Beetlejuice, and Mr. Mom, many others. But he is absolutely brilliant. He's a lovely guy as well. And as I keep saying on various things, that it was the most wonderful mix, to have me as a ballet dancer, as a movement double, and then you got the two stunt doubles, and then they reshot the fighting sequences with Dave Lee. But I mean, there was just that wonderful blend of everyone, and I think Michael did a great job. I mean, he looked great, his voice was perfect. He was a great Bruce Wayne as well, and I totally admire and respect him. I think he's a terrific actor, and to have him with Jack and Kim, and everybody else, it was a beautiful cast. It really was.
And the chemistry shows up so well on screen.
That's great.
So the movement double aspect of it, I've read and heard through other interviews you've done and doing research that was mainly because they brought you in mainly because it was almost impossible to move in that suit. And so they needed you to add like the athleticism to it, or is there another reason
Yeah.
behind that?
Yeah, I mean that was very much it, because if we think about it, Sean, the late Sean, so sad he passed so young as well. But Sean was in there first, because I think possibly, when they cast this movie, they thought, well, okay, Michael isn't your typical sort of Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Van Damme type, but he'll do great. We've got the suits, and then we can get a really good, because I mean, stunt guys train, as we know, in so many different aspects, don't they? They can be good at horse riding, they can be good at fighting, falling, the whole thing, driving. So they must have felt initially that Sean was right, but then it did miss that fluidity, because yes, the suit was very restricting. It was very thick, and it definitely missed something in order for them to say, we need to get a dancer in here. I think sometimes, in these documentaries that you see on YouTube, and I know Peter McDonald, I mean, he didn't really sell me too well. He just said, I did the walking. Well, I did far more than walking, as you know. But I think it just lacked that fluidity and grace and elegance and all those things, because you can be in a suit, and you can be a stocky sort of muscular guy or whatever, but you still don't necessarily hold yourself and move the same way as a dancer, because we've all been taught that lift, keeping the shoulders back, and it's like you're being lifted from the, like there's a ring in the chest which lifts you, keeps you very elegant and poised. So I think, yeah, I came in, I was able to add that much needed elegance and athleticism that was missing, because it was very much illustrated when in the bell tower scene. I'd done a lot of work there. That was probably one of my biggest scenes, the initiation coming out the bat wing, and it sort of interjects between me and Michael coming out of the crash, the wreckage, and then getting to the cathedral doors, etc., etc. And then I remember doing quite a bit where I'd open the trap door, come out. Of course, all the close-ups are Michael, but then all the other movement is me. And then I'd done quite a bit. Then they thought, right, this is the bit now we need to get Dave Lee in to do the fighting. And he had done that. And then he tried to carry on and move the way I could, but he just couldn't do it. I mean, that's no disrespect to Dave. I mean, he was terrific at what he did, but it just shows you the differences in how people could handle that suit. And you think he did brilliant for being able to move the way he did in a fighting aspect in the suit. But with regards to grace and elegance and all of that, they just couldn't do it, because Peter McDonald called me back in. And then I did some more walking, and I did a lot of the stalking with the Joker, etc. So I think what it all alludes back to, if you like, is that this was like a dream magic role for me to get because I'd got all these things in my makeup bag, you know, my bag of tricks, if you like, where I'd done so much sport, I'd done all the dance for many years, I'd performed an awful lot. And so really that gave me that lovely facet of Batman. And then Sean did all these other great things as well. And then Dave did his thing and Michael, of course. So I think it was that perfect blend of everything that it made it so unique that we all were needed. And it worked so beautifully.
It definitely did. It's kind of funny to think about that scene where you're stalking the Joker and how, like, it, I mean, it's tough to imagine that there are four people in that suit at the in that scene because you don't see it, and it's incredibly impressive how it all cuts together. And
Yes, so cool.
honestly, it like you said, it blended really well. So as far as like the suit itself. I mean, it's become notorious over the years, right? Like you couldn't turn your head. It was almost couldn't throw a punch. Like, what were some of the limitations that you found in the suit that you were able to kind of work around because of your background dancing?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's probably come out an awful lot through these documentaries and conversations is because the cowl was pulled down tight and glued onto the cape, that was incredibly restricting. I mean, I didn't find the actual suit itself too bad at all, you know, because I'd worn so many costumes. I'd worn, you know, in period dramas, I'd done quite a lot of dance work and things, and you can wear some very, very fitted costumes. But that was the worst aspect, was the fact of the cowl being pulled down tight and glued to the cape. And as I say, that did give that restricted movement. But I think, you know, the thing with dancers are is they are real masochists, you know, that they take the pain, they take the restrictions, they'll just get on with it. And I just did the same. I mean, I think if you have that psychological thing of thinking, God, it's really hot, isn't it? And all this is really tight. It's a thing that can actually make you feel even more uncomfortable and probably feeling like you've not got much breath or anything else. But I was able to, it's that dedication thing again of getting into that zone of thinking, you know, this is nothing. I can manage this. It might not move the way I would ideally want to it if it was a much thinner nylon or something like that, a different material. But no, I think the way I overcame it was that you know, dancers, we're very supple anyway, you know, and I would do lots of warm-up exercises, you know, and through the neck and the shoulders as well, and do the best. I mean, you can only do the very best you can with the costume, but I didn't allow it to restrict me, to stop me. I just felt so incredible in that costume anyway. You can imagine, can't you? I mean, that kind of strength and presence that it gave you, and that gorgeous belt, and then the cape, and I could do all these lovely swishing cape popping movements as well. You know, it was just a dream come true to get a costume like that, you know. So yeah, I didn't find it a problem at all.
Wow. I've never really heard that with the dancing and how it I guess I've never really thought about how compressing all that is.
Yeah, I mean, but there's a very good example I can give you, Grant, which is Dave Murch, who had worked on, I think it could have been the Greystoke movie. Well, he certainly worked on a movie where there was a lot of actors that were in ape, you know, playing apes, and they had those specific costumes. I mean, I'd have loved to have done something like that as well, because I love how athletic and nimble they were. But he said to me, you know, not without blowing my own trumpet. It's not for that at all. It's just to show my kind of commitment. And he said, I just can't believe you, Carl. You never complain about anything. He said, I had these actors, you know, they were there and they couldn't wait to rip the costumes off, and they were complaining about being hot. And, you know, I could see that it was making it worse in a sense, but he said, you just get on with it. You never complain. You just do it. And I said, oh, thank you for that. But I just feel that's the way it should be. You know, no prima donnas here, you know, sort of thinking you're above anything. Just get on with it, you know, just enjoy it. As I say, I was a masochist anyway. I used to train such a lot with my dance and with my fitness and things. And I just absolutely took it with both hands and ran with it.
You say no prima donnas there as you're working with, you know, Jack Nicholson, yes. Like some of the biggest stars Hollywood's ever had.
I know. I mean, I'd always had, you know, because people say, well, you know, didn't you do this, or did, you know, did you talk to them? And it's just, I mean, I think if you do a sequel or if you do more things, you build up that kind of rapport. I mean, we certainly had a very good rapport, but I think everybody's getting their job done, and the specifics and the way the schedules work is that, you know, there was times I wasn't even near Michael, you know, he'd be doing his stuff and I'd be over in a different part of the stage or whatever. But we all have that wonderful respect and appreciation for one another. And when I got the opportunities, when I could watch Jack, you know, during filming and do his takes, that was magnificent because he was so professional, as Michael was as well. But, you know, he could get those lines. I mean, the charisma and all those things. And he was an actor I greatly admired. And my late parents were huge fans, and my family were as well, you know, of his versatility and the great roles he played. But I think, you know, all in all, considering how the schedules were, the different parts and what we were doing, the times that we did get together, you know, and I spent quite a bit of time with Kim during some of the scenes. She was so lovely. And Jack, I mean, Jack and Michael got these nicknames for me, which I was very flattered by. But, you know, there was a lovely sort of chemistry and respect, as I say, with one another. So it was fantastic.
That, I mean, I've Jack Nicholson and is just one I've been looking up to forever. I couldn't imagine even like sharing a stage, like even that mile and a half where you talk about that stage being, I couldn't imagine being in that same mile, like doing the same thing. It's impressive.
Well, the thing was, I'd gone to this amazing party. I think this is before I was doing some stuff with Jack, and I'd said to his dresser, I said, look, all I want to do is just kind of like an icebreaker. I just want to say hello. I'm not going to overstep my mark, you know, because I always respect people's privacy and everything else. And I said to Dave, look, I'd really, and he sort of arranged it, and we just kind of acknowledged one another, and that was all it needed, really, just that we knew who each other was. And that was a very relaxed party. It was fantastic, really, because Michael was there as well. But, you know, it's fascinating, really. That's like behind the scenes stuff, because I think you may have heard before, I fell madly in love with someone who was working on the movie, and she had the placement with Vin on this movie. And it was the last thing she'd sort of tried. So it was kind of fate that we were drawn together. But I think what gave me another even more big boost was that Jack was very, very enamored with her, because she was a very beautiful, unique lady who'd done incredible in the design world. And sadly, you know, she passed only a few years ago. But it just gave me a really fantastic boost, where I thought, well, I've got someone like Jack Nicholson that's, you know, very enamored with my lady, and Batman won through the day. So Batman won through twice, not only through the movie, but with that as well. So that was really quite funny, actually. But yeah, he was great. He really was great.
That's the story. I actually hadn't heard that. That is, I mean, Congratulations, Batman.
Thank you. I mean, the film had all these, you know, this film had everything for me because it introduced me to a wonderful lady. And all right, we had 2 years, but they were incredible 2 years. But then I had the meeting with Prince, where sadly I never managed to get him to communicate as such with me, but he paid me the highest honor when he put the picture of me in the bell tower in the, or his team did anyway, in the CD booklet. But you know, I had all these amazing things like that, you know, that I was given great things from the movie. I got one of the original chest plates from John Evans, special effects supervisor, and Bob Ringwood was very close to giving me a beautiful picture. But of course, I got the Herbert's pictures and all the other stuff. And, you know, there was so much that came with the movie, you know, just the friendships and everything else. So it's a great part of my life that I shall cherish forever. You know, it's maybe 33 years old, but as you can probably tell with how passionate I am talking about it, it means such a great deal to me because, you know, I think in life it's about quality rather than quantity. I've never been a greedy person. That there's been these opportunities that I've missed out on. You've been had very close calls, but then something like Batman comes along and it can just wash away all those kind of frustrations and disappointments away. And I just feel so eternally grateful for having that opportunity and just, you know, meeting and sharing wonderful moments with the fans, you know, and everybody else. It's wonderful.
That's incredible. I guess you're still meeting fans 33 years later.
I am. Yeah.
Literally right here.
I guess my next question just has to do with, did y'all know immediately that this movie was going to be iconic, or was there a certain point during the filming or just when you saw it? Well, at what point did you realize how iconic the movie would become?
Well, you had that good faith with having all these magic ingredients coming together, you know, having the Prince, the Danny Elfman soundtrack, having Jack Nicholson and Michael and Kim, having the wonderful design. But I suppose, you know, you're just hoping that everybody embraces it, because with Michael being quite a unique choice in that sense. But I think, you know, you get very much in the zone. You keep busy. You're doing the best possible job that you can do. You just have the faith, basically. But then when that 1989 Batmania went, and then I felt it, you know, right the way, you know, I just go out with the Batman jacket on that I was given and all these wonderful things, just the hype and the excitement. And then that was when you realize this is going to be massive. Wow. So I think initially you had the faith, but there's a little bit of precaution there, of course, you know, but then as we know, it just was so huge.
And it still is so huge.
It is still so huge. Yes. I mean, even now, you know, it's, I think what's great is that parents are getting their kids to see it and, you know, keeping that just perpetually going, you know, because it will always be considered so iconic and the gold standard, the benchmark for all the other movies that subsequently came out.
Right. And you still meet people who talk about Michael Keaton's their favorite Batman, 1989 is their favorite Batman movie. And we are 33 years and almost a dozen Batman movies removed.
That says something, doesn't it? It really does.
Really does. So I guess kind of moving out of Batman, I'm curious to know what your career's looked like since you donned the cowl.
Yes. Well, I did. As I say, we went on a different journey with the returns not happening for me. That was kind of so many different elements. I
had this fantastic chat with Tim at a rap party, and he was asking, you know, if I'd worked in America. But, you know, so what I did basically, because I didn't do the returns, I went to see Danny Cannon for Judge Dredd. I went to go up for Eyes Wide Shut, the Stanley Kubrick. But I was steadily working, doing my usual things, which were I was doing these big trade shows around Europe where cars were being launched, and there were big extravaganzas with dancers and stunt drivers and aerial artists and those kind of things. I did a whole variety of things, lots of commercials, some big commercials for America, very successful. TV, working with a lot of different comedy acts that we have here in Britain that were very, very popular. Did so much of that, you know, the whole realm really. And also was trying to get the drumming going again. And I was playing with a band, a singer-songwriter as well, and there was potential about getting a record deal. Then I met some amazing American producers that were living in London. They'd both been very successful here in London. I got with the Spice Girls singing coach, would you believe? There was talk of me doing something with singing and drumming. And then I got introduced to people with doing some voiceover work. I was very interested in broadcasting as well. I then went to America, quite some years down the track. That was in 99, and I was doing some work over there. I was doing some choreography. I was acting a bit and dancing a bit there. I was also playing with a band. There was all these things going on. I mean, I was always getting on really well, and then getting just pipped at the post. I think Singapore Radio were very interested in me at one time, and then I just missed out on that. I came back to the UK in 2001, and I saw a very, very big potential job just in a magazine called Time Out, which was the magazine I used to subscribe to when I lived in London. Gives you the overall picture of what's going on. And I got this massive kind of PR it's an experiment, but it was a fantastic idea of getting a fictitious family in Harrods Windows, you know, the biggest store, most world-famous store there, and launching, showcasing this latest technology to the world, which was the Korean-based company LG. And I'd been familiar with LG in Australia, so I knew a lot about that, and then got this fantastic opportunity. And we were giving radio and TV interviews to so many people from all around the world. I mean, I gave a press conference, I think, to 60 journalists from around the world. And, you know, that was going to be a big launch for me doing a different kind of thing, because I'd always been interested in acting and broadcasting as well. And it seemed to get this massive kind of response. And then things can happen. I think I did one job, which was a big job, a big thing over in the UK was a program called Tomorrow's World, which sort of had all the technology and information for people. It was a fantastic show. I did a big thing with them. And then it kind of, you know, it was weird how things can go sometimes. You get these real peaks and troughs. I did work with some other radio stations. I helped with a youth radio station. And then I was getting a little bit frustrated with stuff. I started a family. I had two beautiful daughters. And then I went back to one of my other loves, which is I grew up on a neighbouring farm, a local farm near to where the family home was. And I wanted to educate children. So I took a lot of schools around educating them about the field to fork, way, you know, with food growing and food, and was driving something very normal to my film career and stuff. I was driving the tractor and I was taking all these different groups round and supporting local growers and suppliers. So that you know, I'm a very much a multifaceted kind of guy, you know, that I love so many things in life, which I think is the way I am anyway, and it's made my life so much more enriching. And even now, you know, I love all that kind of stuff. You know, I grew up with my parents and my grandparents growing things, and it's all part of what I love, you know, really. I think now I've got the hunger again to get the suit back on and maybe do some appearances and some cons, whatever. I've been enjoying doing all these lovely podcasts. But, you know, I'd just like to say that I'm an all-round guy that loves nature and helping one another and supporting one another. Say I've loved helping children learn more because it's things that have been forgotten over years. And bringing that sort of wealth of knowledge and interest that I have on that side.
That is incredible. Just absolutely wonderful. I'm sure you've impacted a lot of lives, and to, you know, get a lot of young farmers. I grew up, my grandparents had a farmland and a garden, and so I grew up helping, and I completely can understand that love for nature.
That's fantastic. No, that's wonderful. I mean, I think, you know, you find in many ways, you know, you can get, is it Sam Neill that's the Kiwi actor that's got a vineyard and a farm in New Zealand. I'm sure that's right. But I think, you know, if you're that kind of wholesome type of person that, you know, I've always loved nature and that ethos, if you like. And yes, I was very lucky that both my parents were, the 50s was their era, and that really washed off on me. So I loved all those 50s kind of actors and actresses and the people like Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire. All those beautiful things. It just seems such a happy, joyous time. You know, there was great skills that these people had and that lovely respect for one another. So I grew up with all of that, a love of great music as well. I mean, I'm not frightened to say I love Nat King Cole and Frank Sinatra as well as all the other more modern stuff. You know, I was exposed to Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and everything, and I've got a rich palette of music that I love. I'm a big lover of jazz, Miles Davis and all these great people as well. So I've got all this richness inside me, but I've always believed in, you know, helping one another and, you know, inspiring others, you know. So I've helped a lot of people along the way. I've given them opportunities in showbiz, you know. I've supported dancers and given them opportunities because choreographers have hired me and then said, oh, we need a such and such girl or whatever to work with you. And just encouraging young people, you know, because there's a lot of this that they're lost in a way. They don't know where to go, or they need inspiration, motivation. I love doing that as well with people and helping people with the food as well, you know, and saying, look, you know, grow a bit of stuff yourself, or, you know, learn more what you're putting into yourself, where it's coming from, you know. It's all great stuff, really. And I love it when you see programs or learn about people that are doing that. They're getting some chickens. I mean, Rachel, who's my lady, she's fantastic. She's had lots of chickens over the years. She grows a lot of her own veg. It's just really interesting, you know. It's another part of life, isn't it, that is there, you know. And I embrace it all. I really do. So I'm an all-round kind of guy.
That is honestly not at all what I expected after the Batman conversation, but that is absolutely just wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, it makes you very rounded. you know, I think it's very sad when people come off the rails and, you know, you think of all that talent and all of that waste in a way. And I don't think there's anything wrong with just having an appreciation of nature and people, especially, you know, just helping people and, you know, making the most, because we live in such a fast world now. People don't spend time to talk or interact. You know, I think you can bring your warmth and your generosity and your kindness to people as well, which I think is the most important thing, that giving people that, because, you know, we're never really around for that long. But if we can touch people, if we can make a difference, and that means an awful lot to me, really.
I wholeheartedly agree, and it's good to see a life that has been dedicated to that, all the fruits that it brings. So thank you for sharing that with the world.
Literal fruits.
Yeah, because I think, you know, it's very sad when you can get, you know, this side of people which is constantly fixated with money and materialism. But, you know, I mean, as Steve Jobs, that great philosophy that the great Steve Jobs had, you know, you can be a billionaire like he was, but if you haven't got your health, you know, then it means nothing. But it's what it's really saying is, which is what I've always believed in, and right from a young age, I've always just loved life. You know, I've always just had that zest and that passion for life and for people. So that, you know, the time we're here, if you can just share and enjoy that, and yeah, and you get the successes along the way, like I've had with the Batman and various other things, but it's never taken away my love of people and just kindness and helping and whatever, you know, just to make it even more beautiful, really, in that way. Because I say, if you've got all the money and the materialism and you don't give, then it's a sad world in my way, anyway, in my eyes.
That's a good way to live life. And I think that if more people thought that way, we'd live in a much better world.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just to give you a few quick things, what I've found in my life is, because of my personality, if you like, that there's been these, because I've always, like with a friend of mine, he said, well, you be the good Samaritan. You don't do things to get back, you know, but if you do good things, it's amazing what can happen down the line. And I've found that very much, just being myself and just having warmth and being genuine to people, it's rewarded me down the line. Where I remember when I was waiting to go and see a fantastic Leonardo exhibition, Da Vinci exhibition, and it was sold out, and then somebody offered me a ticket, you know, and then there's been things where I went to Larry Carlton, you know, fantastic American guitarist that played with Steely Dan, great session guitarist. I was going to see him, and I was just literally going to the gig, and then someone offered me the meet and greet part of the ticket. And it's just, I think it's just an energy that you give off. If you're somebody that's warm and open and friendly, you know, you're not doing anything for the sake of it, but good things do come back to you, because you're just that way yourself. You know, you help others, and you just want to make life better in many ways. So it's very interesting that.
That is, you know, I was not expecting to such like life advice in this, and now it's like, well, this is going to be like all the promotion, right? It's like this is how you should live your life, everybody.
Yeah, well, we try, don't we? If we can just make a difference, and you know, kindness costs nothing, as they say, and you know, just, I mean, we know that life is complex, and you know, there's lots of frustrations and things, but I think you just navigate through it and just make time better for yourself and for others, you know, within that. So that's the way I look at it.
Well, thank you very much for that, and thank you so much for coming on. It has been an absolute pleasure to get to talk to you.
Well, it's been my pleasure too, to speak to both of you as well.